Encore with Claire O'Brien. Arts and entertainment for the Midlands. With the Dean Crow Theatre and Arts Centre Athlone. Imagine the possibilities. DeanCrowTheatre.com.
You're welcome tonight to the Best of Encore in 2022. We start tonight with Garth Brooks on the prospect of 400,000 people paying to hear a small town boy.
No, try to remember, Garth's hometown is 17,000. So it's kind of the same feeling that you get when you're standing on the tee on the stage in Central Park, and an estimated crowd of 850,000 to 1.2 million people, and you're just looking going, my hometown wouldn't even be a dot in this place. So the Queen and I were dead asleep when the phone rang, and all we could make out from Peter Aiken was, all five are gone, all five are gone. And we couldn't believe it. Just so grateful, so thankful for the second chance and for them to show up like this. This is going to be an amazing, I would say night, but this is going to be an amazing five night.
What makes an amazing gig, Garth? What's the magic?
Well, it's not the number, I can tell you that. And it's what's exchanged, I think, between the artist and the people that allow him to be an artist, or her to be an artist. It's that exchange. And I got to be honest with you, Claire, I'm wondering if, for the first song or two, I'm wondering if they're going to be looking at the artist and seeing if the artist has changed. And I think the artist will be looking at the crowd and seeing if they have changed. And this will be a sweet little marriage. But I think the quicker we get to realizing that we're all there to have fun, the quicker it's going to go from the concert mode to a party mode. And that's what I remember Ireland as.
This is going to be your final big stadium tour. Do you still love it, the performing?
Oh, my gosh. It's even better. I'm a guy. I'm not supposed to say size matters. It does. I'm telling you, 17,000 people singing the river as opposed to 80,000 people singing the river, it's crazy. So it's good. You know, this is our first stadium tour. It's our last one. The crew is just, we're just over. We're expecting way too much from them. Band gets to come home. Artist, of course, I'm the last guy in the building and the first guy to leave. So my life is nothing but just dessert. But the crew has been gone now for 4 months here in the summer. They're going to be gone for another four. I need to get them a gig where they get to enjoy what they do and get to enjoy their family like I get to.
Have you written songs, or is it in the pipeline that you could write songs based around anything to do with your Irish experiences?
When I think of the Irish experiences, I just think about love. That's what I can't tell you how much when, I don't know, Ms. Claire, if because you're from there, I don't know if you get this, but when you land there, your fists relax. Everything about you just feels at ease. You feel at home, even though, you know, I don't fit in there. I don't look like the people there. I don't talk like the people there. But for some reason, it just feels like home. So I think that Ireland is a lot of stuff I write, whether we're mentioning Ireland in the song or not.
Where we are here in the Midlands, Garth, is the real home of country music. What would you say to all of those great performers, those young people who are getting started, and they're currently 23-year-olds playing for small stadiums and small pubs in their own hometown? What would you say to those singer-songwriters?
Well, if they're in what we call the rural kind of place or the country, I would say count your blessings, because if you're singing country music, you already have a leg up on everybody, because country music is just real life put to melody, right? That's all it is. And so those experiences that you're experiencing every day with the one horse town and the, oh my gosh, I can't wait to get out of this town kind of thing. Be thankful for that little town, because that little town is the basic ingredient of what it takes to be a country artist for me. I know, being from Oklahoma, being raised by Raymond and Colleen Brooks, I don't think I know what country music is. I know what country music is because you live it as a child. So just be thankful for that gift.
I mentioned local singer-songwriters. One is Hubert Murray. Another Midlands singer-songwriter who released new music this year is folk singer-songwriter Eva Coyle from Athlone. Her EP, Down to the Shore, was released at the start of the year. And she told me about the writing process.
Well, I tend to just kind of, like, I haven't written something now in a while, probably because I'm playing a lot of the stuff at the moment live from the album and all that. But when I am kind of in a, I suppose, space where I melodies are, you know, I'm kind of cleansing things, or it's where I'm it's where I'm pushing something out, you know, but it's a very kind of natural thing, you know. Some people, you know, learn melodies, but I find it's a thing where I like to play them out and kind of work around them, and I'm excited for the summer in a way, because I know when I take a little break from, well, whenever I kind of get some space away from the songs that I've been doing a lot, something else will probably come through, you know, and I'm looking forward to that as well, because it's been kind of a long time. Like, it's been 2 years. We started recording this album in 2018, so it's been a long time kind of sitting with the bits and drafting them, and kind of a slow roasted affair, you know.
Matias Perez was involved in the sound for the album, but there are quite a few other musicians who are involved in this. Particularly, what I noticed, John Bleck, who has had a phenomenal year so far.
John came on board with one of the songs, Wandering Sea, and Matthias is a friend from when I studied in Sweden, himself and Nina, his wife, and they were both part of the album, and Katie Grennan then from Chicago, another friend, and John Williams. So it was a very collaborative thing where I wanted friends really on it that I connect with, and so it's a special one for me because it's my debut album, but it was nice to have those people a part of it, yeah.
And that is Athlone's Eva Coyle. After the break, some of the big events that happened in 2022. That was the gorgeous sound of Piper's Boreen by Noel O'Farrell. He spoke to me ahead of a new festival in two locations in June. I think this is the nicest name for a festival that I've ever come across. Tell me a little bit about where the inspiration for the festival came from, and whether the name came before the idea came.
I get that's a great question. The canal is right close by to where we live, and for all my life I've walked the canal, and all my life it's been a presence in our lives as a family, and from a very, very young age I have great memories of being brought up there with my dad and you know, running up alongside it and the stories that were told from it, but always being aware acutely of the connection between where the canal originated and where it went to, because my mother's family would have been in Dublin and quite near it in Drumcondra, so there would have been a connection that we would have been told, well, if we build a raft and we get on the canal within a few hours we can be in Nana's house for tea. We built a raft once or twice, but we never got any further than 5 yards, but also being made acutely aware of where that canal went from Dublin through the centre of the Midlands and Meath and Kildare, etc., etc., and then entered the Shannon at Clondra. Equally, we were brought up with the stories about the Grand Canal, because my dad's family were Kildare people. So we crossed the canal, the Grand Canal, going into Kildare, and we're always told about the canal. Now, where the love of the possibility, perhaps, was that's an idea that we always used to speak about, myself and Martina, you know, and that's my wife. What if maybe we were going for a stroll down the canal, the way you do, and listening to the sounds that you listen to, and perhaps the tones of maybe, I don't know, traditional air or a baroque air or somebody telling a story was going to come around the corner at you. What would it feel like and what would it be like? And that really kind of was always there. I always thought about that, and we always spoke about that. At the lockdown period, then we started to meet more and more people. Mm. So more and more people started to gather on the canal to walk by it, to imbibe what it has to offer, which is a beautiful space of hundreds of years there. It's all there for the last hundreds of years.
And that was Noel O'Farrell discussing tales and tunes from the towpath. Louise McSharry and Mark Gavin, who you'll hear now, joined me to chat about Port Art Collective, an organisation developed in Port Arlington from the ground up.
I think it actually traces its origins back, like, you know, almost a decade before the Port Art Collective, you know, kind of even came together. Like, I would see the start of this has actually been part of the Dakota Dojo group that started, you know, literally, it's almost a decade now. And there was basically an advertisement one day from kind of a local voluntary group looking to set one up in the town. And so a group of us came down, we got involved, and from there, it managed to get going. There was a good group, so it stayed sustainable. And as we went along, initially our focus would have been on STEM. So it's kind of your science, not technology, engineering, and maths. And probably about 4 years ago, we were kind of given an opportunity. It was through the Lease Partnership to see what could we set up a makerspace in the town. And this is where we kind of changed towards, say, STEAM. So we brought in the A, which is really the arts part of it. And I think that was a really key thing, you know, and from the side of bringing in the artists, but also expanding out the reach that we had to kids and to people to learn. So that was when the makerspace came about. That's when we realised we had this absolute amazing latent pool of talent, I suppose, in the town.
Before you get into all that, tell us a little bit about the makerspace, where it is, what happens in it, and how that has developed.
So the makerspace is based in the Innovation Hub in the Enterprise Centre in Port Arlington. So it's just located kind of close to the train station. There's a dedicated set of units. So there's hot desks, there's kind of meeting rooms, there's a training area, and then obviously we got the makerspace. And in the makerspace, we'd have different types of equipment. So there's a laser, there's a CNC router. We've got a couple of different types of 3D printers, including an Ultimaker, which is beautiful, and it does great work. Like, there's also sewing machines, and there's electronics as well, too. So the idea is that it's kind of a suite of stuff that lets you come in and essentially try your hand at, like, you know, making things yourself, learning new technologies. And what we really found is the most valuable thing that we have is actually the space. Because if you look at the kind of stuff, so over the summer, we're running a number of summer camps, and it's a really eclectic mixture. This is where the A part came in. We found there was a big demand for stuff like Dungeons and Dragons, which you wouldn't think potentially. We do graphic design courses. We've got sound engineering as well, too. We do kind of Unity, which is 3D game development. So this was really the thing that unleashed, I suppose, the A part of it. So that's all done in the makerspace. As I said, we run regular courses in sewing, and, you know, for kids, for adults, and there's different groups use it. And then the summer, we try to bring in a really kind of a wide range of crafts and other things that people can try. But just a slightly different thing. What you find kind of unites a lot of this stuff is that it's not like... The town is really well serviced with some brilliant sports clubs, like at the rugby club, the Gaelic, and the
soccer.
All
towns are in that situation. Lots and lots 100%. of sports facilities, and much less for people who are interested in the arts. A bit like a lot of people's school experiences. If you don't, well, certainly in the old days, if you don't make the sports team, how are you going to spend your free time?
This is it, yeah. No, and do you know, I think one of the interesting things for this is that, as you said, it's a repeated setup in so many towns. And like, Port Arlington's not a very big town or a very small town. It's kind of a standard rural town. I'm sure it's replicated across the countryside. And it was just kind of by chance, from the genesis of the Dakota Dojo to the makerspace, there's this latent, you know, need, I think, in a lot of towns for stuff that's not purely sports-based. There's going to be, and a big part of it is that the kind of the community and the social aspect. It kind of creates that club vibe for people that might necessarily, you know, tug out in shorts and run around and kick the balls around. So there's a big benefit to having that as part of it, you know.
And that was Mark Gavin of the Port Arlington Art Collective. But we could also have chatted to people from the Fringe Festival at Athlone's All-Ireland Drama Festival and from the Sween Spare events that happened all over Offaly. It was a busy year in the arts this year. After the break, we're coming to spoken words.
Sometimes I have to write what I can't paint. We are in a strange time now when it comes to fossil fuel. This is what I saw. Summer 2021. The final cut. I walked White's Bog in Multifarnham and watched acres of newly cut turf begin a transformation. I was photographing and sketching there, and over the summer saw the small footings grow and extend in every direction. The footings, balanced with a knacky precision and a sculptor's skill, were a reminder of the knowledge, the labour, and the tradition that has passed through generations of families who each summer visit the bog. I listened to the quietness. I listened to the call of the cuckoo as the bent figures moved quietly, rhythmically through the rows. Hands lifting, turning, placing. Lifting, turning, placing. This is mindfulness in action. Hours of labour pass. Time becomes still, and I could almost see people's thoughts and worries form in the clouds above, which then gently moved along. First one, then another, a convoy of colourful tractors and four-wheeled vans and jeeps arrived. Saved white fertiliser bags were packed full of the black dried sod and loaded. Exposed turf, built to its summit on trailers, left a breadcrumb trail of turf along the roads. When the wind came from further away and cool, it brought with it the sounds of the industrial machines. These relentless ants suck up a bog into high brown rolling hills. This peaty land, transported in trucks, packed in ships, is exported to the ends of the world. As I walked White's Bog last summer, I passed sticks. On each stick was a name. Each name a family. Rows and rows of families. Fathers, brothers, sisters, cousins, neighbours. Whom together, in an ancient system of nods and nuances, negotiated the toil and effort of shared labour in the removal of tons of this gleaned earth, turf, sod. Each sod potential heat, brought home for the winter, stored in sheds, to be transformed into warmth in the battle against cold and damp. I wish now that I had photographed the names on the sticks. Then I could remember them all, more than 200, list them, carve them on stone, a memorial, because last year, for all those who spent their summer there, it was the final cut.
Welcome back to Encore. You just heard artist Ursula Meehan's beautiful The Final Cut. We had lots of writers on Encore this year. Christine Leach, Adele Coffey, Dolores Keaveney and many more. Enda Spellman spoke about his first memoir and he discussed the power of poetry which saved his life.
And
I went to sleep and that was on a Monday. I went to sleep. I slept for 3 days. I remember waking up and my sister was beside me, sitting beside me in the hospital. And she said, "What is today?" She said to me. I just had to wake up and this thing. I said, It's Monday, I said to her. It's on Monday or Tuesday. She said, "It's Thursday, you're after sleeping for 72 hours. I was totally jaded. I was working long hours, not sleeping well. Something had to give, because my mental had to give.
And here we are now, 40 years on from that event. Yeah, 38 years on. What were the positives there, and what supported you along the way in that 38 years?
Well, I started writing poetry about depression. I had a lot of stuff in my head. When I started writing the poetry, someone said to me one time, I was finding it hard to sleep, he said, "Write down something on a piece of paper about everything that went wrong during your day and read through it 10 times and tear it up I started putting it in poetic form. That's how my poetry started. It started after my depression. I never wrote poetry before that. And in 1996, I brought out them books, A Little Bit of This, A Little Bit of That, Darkness and Light. And I got a great reaction down home roundabout. I never heard anyone say a bad word about my poems and my books.
And that is Enda Spellman. I chatted to Owen Egan, who released the latest in his Gainstown trilogy series, and he spoke about the books on his shelf.
You're a massive reader, and I know you've converted your garage into a library to floor-to-ceiling book spaces. Tell me, what do you look for as a writer in a book that holds your attention?
I did. I'm a hoarder. I hoard books. I still have my Enid Blyton and Harney Boyd books from when I was 12 or 13 years of age. What I want is a fast start. I want something that's going to grip me straight away. And I want something that's going to keep me going for at least 70 or 80 pages. And once I'm invested then, unless something really silly happens, like in a crime novel, that something science fiction or something mad happens, I will read to the end. But the first page, the first line, the first paragraph, the first page has to hook me in. And I don't think that's just me, Claire. I think that's anybody, regardless of the genre, regardless of what's happening. Nobody wants mundane. We spend our lives doing mundane things, and nobody wants to be told, well, I went to the shop and I've done this. We do that every single day. So whatever happens in the book, it has to be realistic, but it has to be multiplied by 100 or 1,000 to what we do normally. And that's what grabs people's attention. That's what grabs mine.
And speaking of books on the shelf, Patricia Gibney from Mullingar told us she writes in bed. And she also reads there.
You've read Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. What was so great about it?
I just found it was different because I love dipping into something different because I read a lot of crime and crime series. And every so often I just love to pick up a book that kind of brings you into a different world. And it's set in the 60s. And it's the lead character is one of those who is totally different from anybody you'd meet in your daily life. And she's trying to overcome the male-dominated world. And she's a chemist. And she, because of things, circumstances in her life, she finds herself using her chemistry for cooking. It's brilliant. It's classic. It's a brilliant book.
Okay. And if I look through my Audible here, I see quite a lot of Patricia Gibney books, which are narrated. I think, are they all narrated by Michelle Moran?
Yes, Michelle is brilliant.
You were so excited when you realised that she was going to be reading the books.
Yeah, and my readers or listeners love her as well. I didn't know Michelle before she started doing my books, but I found I've talked to her since, or back at the beginning, and she is from Dunboyne, I think, County Meath, and she's lived for 25, 30 years in London.
Okay.
And she's an actress as well. So she said her name is down to play Lottie if we ever get the DVD.
Yeah.
But she's really good. I'm delighted, you know, that she's doing all the books, and she's just finished narrating The Guilty Girl. The books that's coming out in June.
And tell me, have you, when you listen to those books, or do you listen to them and do you enjoy them as you listen to them?
I get sent a sample and I listen to that. But I don't even read my own books when they're published because I'm terrified of finding a mistake in them or something. And I'm so engrossed in writing the next one that, you know, it brings me out of what I'm doing now back into, you know, a previous book. But I think the biggest thing is that I'm just terrified of reading them or listening to them.
It's extraordinary,
The feedback I get is people just love them. And when I say, like, Michelle is doing, got to narrate the next book, people are absolutely delighted that she's doing the next book. So she's doing a good job, doing a great job with them. The Guilty Girl, it will be out on the 15th of June as the e-book and audio book. And the most recent paperback, if people are interested in the shops now, is Buried Angels.
And that's Patricia Gibney, who is as brilliant as her Lottie Parker series. We're talking about the best, some of the best interviews we had on the show and some of the features, the highlights in the arts in Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. Photographer Tina Claffey published Portal, one of the most beautiful books.
I specialise in macro photography, which is, it's extreme close-up photography because all of the magic is really tiny in the bog. All of the flora and fauna, the magical flora and fauna that I try to capture are very, very small. So I had to invest in a macro lens, and that the macro lens is what is able to capture. It's like using a magnifying glass, but it works on my camera. That's what allows me to capture the flora and fauna within the living carpet of the bog.
And when you say the living carpet of the bog, and you say you use a macro lens, we are talking about minuscule, microscopic images brought up to a point where we can really engage with what's under our feet in a way that we will never have seen it before.
Well, I think so, because I really, what my work, as much as I love it, but one of the main reasons I do it is to raise awareness, because what you are walking on out in the bog is alive, you know. And I used to think of the bog as a dead landscape as a child, because I would be brought there kicking and screaming to cut turf. My dad used to cut turf out in the bog with the slawn back in the day. But my eyes were opened to the living carpet of the bog when I went for a walk with John Feehan way back now. It's 10 years ago now, back in 2012. I went for a walk with him, and he, while we were walking, he gave us a little magnifying glass, like a little eyeglass, a hand lens, and he encouraged us to look at what he was showing us through this hand lens. And that's what really inspired me. It's what woke me up to the wonder that is within the carpet of the bog. Everything was alive. There's carnivorous plants with sticky tentacles. There's sphagnum mosses that are just incredible to look at up close. Amazing water creatures, just kaleidoscopes of colour, really, in the bog. And you wouldn't associate the bog with colour, but it is full of colour. And really, every season has something really amazing to offer.
And when you see the tiny, tiny, tiny details, it's just so incredibly extraordinary. I'm looking at your website at the moment, and on the website you have some of the images from Portal, under the exhibition space, and one of them that catches my eye right at this minute is of a bee, and you can see the pollen on the edge of the tiny, tiny little hairs on his body.
Yeah. Well, that's the magic of macro, because the macro lens, macro photography, sees what the naked eye really can't see. It goes in so close that it captures what the naked eye can't really see at all. So that's why it's very addictive. Once I'm out there, I'm quite hooked. I can get lost in a tiny little area of the bog and spend hours just in a small little area, because there's so much out there. And it's only when you slow down and sit there out among that living carpet that everything will begin to move. And macro photography also forces you to slow down. So I'm mostly on my belly. I'm lying down out there.
I remember you saying that
with my camera. And, you know, some people pass me by going, what is she asked? But I love it. I love it. I find new things all the time, and it excites me, and I can't wait to get home and download what I've captured and find out what it is. And, like, there's all sorts of
sorts
ancient
of treasures.
Creatures out there.
But there's all sorts of treasures. I'm looking at another image of what if I saw it from a distance, I'd say it's probably like a little water beetle or a little water boatman. But when we look at it up close and it's on a tiny flower, it looks like the pattern on its back is quite literally made of jewels. It's like a casket.
Oh, that's a shield bug. I think that's the birch shield bug you're looking at. And its back is literally the shape of a shield. And to me, that one in particular, that morning was a misty morning, and misty mornings are wonderful for macro photography, because all of the misty dewdrops cling to everything, and it clung to the back of this tiny little birch shield bug. And when I looked through the macro lens, to me it looked like a shield, like a knight's shield studded with amazing jewels.
Oh, with rubies and sapphires. And
yes, exactly.
Oh, my God. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, that's why I love what I do.
Yes.
I love being out there because you never know what you're going to find out there.
Tell me what the image is on the front cover of Portal.
Okay, the front cover is what's known as, it's a little lichen. It's a trumpet lichen, it's like tiny little cups, tiny little vessels. And there's two lichen trumpet cups on the front of the book, and there's morning dew within those cups. And the one drop of dew has fused together with the other. So it's like one fused droplet on these little cups, and that just gives you a sense of the scale. Like it's just one drop within the two cups, so it gives you a sense of the tiny, tiny size of the little lichen trumpet.
You must be used at this stage to people ooing and aahing at the photographs.
It excites me when I get home and I download and I look at the images and go, wow. And even when I look through the camera when I'm taking the photograph, I'm not sure if I've captured it really until I get home. And that's a really exciting thing. I actually sent my book to Sir David Attenborough a few months ago, and I was just blown away that he wrote back to me to thank me for the book, which it's the biggest honour I could ever ask for, because he's one of my idols. But it kind of reinforces to me that I'm on the right track. I'm doing what I love, and that's really key, I think.
Slow down indeed. Portal is gorgeous. Jimmy Keary, the playwright from Westmeath and the author of The Two Loves of Gabriel Foley, spoke about his work and about working with drama groups.
You were in Mountmellick for the first read through of For Better or For Worse, and you were also there on the final night to see the performance.
I was, and I went to one of the dress rehearsals in between as well. So,
why does that matter to you?
Well, writing itself is a very lonely occupation, and I like just meeting with people, connecting with people, especially connected with my work. So I like meeting cast, I like talking to cast, I like talking about how I wrote a play. I just like kind of giving them an insight into the characters or how I see the characters. And obviously audiences are important too, so I just like talking to people. I mean, I'm always available for a chat because, as I say, I spend a lot of time in front of a laptop writing, and you know, it is I'm isolated, so any chance I get to meet people, I take it. And then with the last few years the way they were, I didn't have an opportunity to do that. So that was really one of the first when I went to the read through. I love sitting with a cast when they're reading my play for the first time, because you kind of, they're reacting to what they're reading, with laughter, and it may not make for a great reading, but I enjoy it. I enjoy their spontaneous reaction. It's kind of like adrenaline or like a junkie or whatever. It's just, it gives me a kick.
And then when you go along to a dress rehearsal and then a few nights later to a final performance, do you see any difference?
You see a progression. Obviously, people are more comfortable with their roles. They're more comfortable with their lines. I mean, there is a progression. Obviously, it's a process that every cast has to go through, like from the first read through to the performances. You know, it's a completely different thing at the end than at the beginning, because they're only starting out on the process, like at the first read through. And normally now, I mean, Mountmellick was a rarity. I wouldn't normally have that much association with a group. It's just that they were near, and again, I just had been missing that contact with the group. So unfortunately, from their perspective, I was around a lot.
I don't think they were unfortunate at all. But can I ask you, having been there then for those three really important parts in the journey of a play coming to full production, did you learn anything about the play?
Well, every time I see it performed, you know, I'd make the odd change here and there, or maybe think a line didn't work, or maybe there were too many lines in that particular scene or whatever. I'm a perfectionist, so, and maybe slightly insecure, maybe. And so, when I'm in an audience, I kind of always pick out the person who isn't laughing, or that's just my own hang-up, and you're kind of hoping for a reaction, you know, because the one person that isn't enjoying it, maybe, you know, you kind of focus in on them more than, you know, which I shouldn't, of course, but it's just the way of a playwright, or at least it's my way anyway. When I sit in an audience, it's just great to hear positive feedback and the laughter and that. It's like adrenaline, really.
AC was telling us about somebody you sat beside at a performance who did not enjoy the show, and it made such an impression on you that you included her as a character. Tell us a bit more about that from your perspective.
Yeah, I was at a play down the country, and I turned to a lady at half time, and I can't remember if she knew whether I was the playwright or not, but I said to her, was she enjoying the play? And oh God, no, she didn't like it at all. She was only there to support somebody who was in the cast. And I later found out her first name was Miriam. And so when I was writing my next play, I included the name Miriam in the cast.
And tonight on Encore, as we summarise what happened in 2022, we could have had all the other drama groups, the panto groups, the musical societies. And I hope you will all go on to support them in 2023.